In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a brilliant chat with Warren Dean, data analyst and the founder of DataTail, which is a company that provides Power BI solutions and training to local government. BI stands for Business Intelligence, by the way. It is important to know because we say it a lot during this episode. Warren tells us about his background in data analytics for both state and local governments and how that led to his founding of DataTail. We discuss the importance of data storytelling, and Warren shares some great examples of how councils can use data more effectively as an asset to make decisions that serve our communities. Warren and I discuss the importance of strong data governance and creating data cultures and data communities, as well as some of the things that Warren considers when pulling data sets together. We talk about data being the most common denominator and therefore possibly the key to integrating across disciplines, industries, and governments. And then Warren tells us about the standardized data model he'd like to see that would make it more accessible and affordable for smaller councils that can't afford to hire a data analytics or a BI team. We talk about the importance of data as a skill, not just for the future, but really it's for now as well, and the emerging trends of changes in workplace and mobility in a post-COVID world. We finish our chat discussing some of Warren's favourite data resources. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Warren. How are you today?
Good, thanks, Zoe. How are you?
I'm very well. I was just thinking, how many people call you Dean accidentally?
I get it in emails all the time because having two first names doesn't work so well. And funnily, at school, a lot of people called me Warren Dean as a combined. I'm not sure
where that comes from.
Full name. So, when I'm always introduced, it's Warren Dean. And kids at school used to call me Warren Dean. I don't know. It's just... They just go together, maybe. Two first names make one full name.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, let's jump straight into this. And can you tell us about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So my background, working background, is in the government sector. So I worked many years in state sector at the Justice Department, Education Department, before wanting to move closer to home. So I live in the city of Casey and got a job in local government at the city of Casey. And worked there for maybe 3.5 years, setting up the kind of BI data analyst team. And then just before COVID hit a few months ago, I had a side hustle for a while and kind of moved that into my main hustle, which is DataTail, which is a company that works especially for local government and government, providing Power BI solutions and training. And so my passion really is data analytics. I've been working with data, as when I first got into the industry, but really more about data storytelling, how to take data and interpret it and then present it in a way that it's so obvious that I need to make that decision. So usually my motto is, if you can't understand that visual in 30 seconds, then it's pointless. So, if you're meeting with a CEO and they need to ask you questions about your visualization, then you've missed the mark. So that's something I love doing as data storytelling.
That's awesome. And I'm excited because it's what I've been doing in my studies as well, and writing lots of essays and lots of things about data storytelling. And yeah, I agree. I'm getting more and more passionate about it as well. So yeah, I was really excited when we talked about you coming on the podcast, I think, when you were at City of Casey, and now that you're out on your own is also really exciting. And I'm really keen to dive into a bit more. Okay, but let's first start. We'll go a bit broader around smart cities, smart communities. Tell us what sparked your interest, and don't feel like you have to go that high, but really in that data analytics space.
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting when you say smart cities, smart communities. For me, I don't know, I see them as very different things. So smart cities, I always think of, I'm at a conference and there's that big corridor with all the vendors on the left and right, and I'm looking down at my feet, trying not to make eye contact, because they're going to sell me some type of technology that doesn't solve a problem, but it's a technology. And I'm just trying to get to the, you know, the keynote. Now, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but whenever I think of smart cities, that's what I think about, which smart communities I love, though, because that's a lot of my passion is about building communities. Talk a little bit how I've built data communities in previous roles. But, you know, that's more, you know, using technology to improve the quality of your life. And I think the community kind of gives it that meaning, whereas, I don't know, maybe smart cities have been stolen by conference makers for me.
No, I agree. And I do use them interchangeably, but I think that's more around, sometimes people don't know what I'm saying when I say smart communities still, but they are very different for me as well. I feel like smart cities, the true essence of it, which whatever the hell that means, like, everyone just makes up their own version of it. And yes, there are specific, what's the word, in the standards and that type of thing that we do have definitions of what smart city is and that, but I do think that it has been overtaken by the tech industry. But with smart communities, yeah, I totally agree. It's about building communities, and in all, there's kind of like, for me, it's an umbrella term, so it fits in the true essence of smart city, again, whatever that means. And then you've got your smart regions, smart towns, and then you've got these communities, like you were talking about, that we're building, which are, you know, maybe it's our data community, maybe it's our, you know, I don't know, women in tech community, or maybe it's our cat lovers community. I'm saying that because my cat is scratching at my door. But yeah, I totally agree with you. I couldn't stick with the term smart city because it just didn't sit right with me either, particularly when I wanted to work and talk and interact with people in regional areas as well.
Yeah, good point. From a data analyst perspective, I always saw it as, so when I was previously at the City of Casey, they had a smart cities team, you know, they were doing lots of interesting things with technologies. But to me, it was always just a data source. So for example, I would work with the assets team and I'd work with their assets data. I'd work for the parks team, I'd work for their parks data. I'd work for the smart cities team and I'd work with their LoRaWAN data. So I always just saw it as another data source that was coming in. And my role was, you know, obviously at its source, for example, smart parking, it's helping people find a car park using signage. But my role would be to then take that data and use it as an asset for even more value. So that smart parking example, take that smart parking data, combine it with infringements data, which is a different system, bring that together, and then what insights can we get from taking data from two different sources and bringing it together? So it's an interesting story where I did exactly that, and we were able to analyze parking data around a facility and see that the person who was doing the infringements was missing a heap of infringements. So, you know, he had no KPIs. He was just going out and doing ticketing. No one knew how many tickets he was supposed to be getting. But hang on, we have a smart parking system over here that's telling us where parking is free and overstays. So we tapped into that data and actually hired a person full-time just to look after this one car park because there was so many infringements being missed. Now, I know we don't like paying infringements, but obviously councils have to make money. But that data is just, I suppose, an example of, you know, smart city data that's been used for one purpose. But, you know, as a council, we perform so many services, we can bring all that data into one place and use it as an asset for other things, interesting discoveries.
Mm. Have you got any other examples that you did at City of Casey or other councils where you've brought maybe seemingly non-associated or unassociated data together?
Yeah, well, probably not unassociated, but I suppose the best example I have is kindergartens. So as the council, we look after kindergartens. Where are we going to put the next kindergarten? So if you're purely looking at kindergarten data, we just have enrollments and, you know, they might come in maybe 6 months before the year that the kinder kids are going to start. But we have other data sources and the kindergartens team and the maternal child health team, they might not ever talk because obviously they're doing their own jobs that are very important. But my role when I was working in local government is, you know, I'm centralized. So I have access to everyone's data. So if you ask me where to put the next kinder, what we did was we tapped into maternal child health data. And I said, I have the address of every child within the City of Casey. So we can pretty much predict where they're going to be in 4 years. And obviously, a lot of data stories. I can't show you a data story over a podcast, but we had a really nice heat map that showed locations of kindergartens and a heat map showing where children under four are currently, four and under are currently living. And we saw a massive spot where, you know, in 4 years' time, we're going to need a kindergarten. I can tell you that today. If I wait just using Kinder Kids data, you know, I'm only going to be able to tell you that in 6 months' time. So, yeah, that was a huge, very powerful story and how we can, it is kind of related, but it wasn't within the same system. It wasn't the same part of the business looking after this.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting because I think there's so many cases where you just need to think a little bit broader than the current data that we're looking at to the data. And councils are so rich in data sets. And yeah, it also really, I guess, these decisions are being made right now, right? They're being made whether we have the data or not. And that's one of the biggest things because people, I think, talk a lot about or get worried about having, you know, I guess, you know, all this data available. But it's already being collected. It's already been, and yes, we have to protect it and, you know, we store it well and all those type of things. You follow all the legislation. Yeah. But I think once we start using it to make real decisions, I think sometimes people get worried that, you know, oh, well, now everyone knows everything about me if we're connecting these data sets together. Mm. What are some of the things that you consider when you are pulling these different data sets together?
Yeah, look, there is a bit of pushback sometimes from people because they are scared that you are going to find out that I'm not doing a good job. But really what we're trying to do is help them to do a better job and, you know, empower them. It's a good quote that I like to use from Crindle, which is an Australian research company that says 80% of business data is unused for analytics. And if you think of it in a council space, it would be even bigger than that because a council has, you know, 50 services that they're delivering to the community. And they've all got data. They're all bringing in data. And like you mentioned, you know, there's data entry issues. They're not looking after correctly. So there is that kind of culture piece about data culture and how do we look at the full life cycle of our data from, you know, acquiring to disposing. So there's huge value, especially in local government, in looking after that data.
When you're talking about data culture, like what I'm interested in is like an everyday person might get concerned that, you know, oh, well, we're finding out all this information about me. My council know all this information if they bring it together. Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say maybe is when we actually instill that data culture, the data is better protected because it's better looked after because we're actually understanding what we can and can't do with it, what the rules are and are not, how we need to store that data, what the formatting is, how to make sure that we are using it appropriately, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. So all the data governance, which is definitely not my expertise, but definitely an important factor in making those considerations. Mm. But I mean, even if you think about it, you know, sometimes people are worried because, you know, the council, we have a lot of data. When I worked at council, you have a lot of data. But I mean, I just think of how much data Google has on me. Like Google knows my everything and I don't seem to worry so much about it. Why shouldn't councils be able to make, you know, good decisions that are actually, you know, governed, proper decisions, but we're going to help the residents and the community provide better services?
Mm. Data governance, that is the word I was looking for. Thank you for that. Okay, let's go on to, we talked a little bit about what sparked your interest and we did talk about what is a smart community, but I'm keen to get a definition from you about what is a smart community to you.
Yeah, look, I don't know about a definition, but for community, part of my role now where I'm consulting is building a data community. So the tool that they use and what I use is Power BI. Similar ones are Tableau and Qlik. So these are BI products. But, you know, we can't just give someone a technology and then expect them to go away and do it. We support them via a data community. And so last week, I was running an event where I had people from within the business come in and telling their stories. How have I used Power BI? How has it improved what I'm doing? We have learning opportunities. So I'll teach them a little bit of this is what's new in Power BI. This is how you can do something differently. And I think that community thing, you know, it translates to smart cities, communities as well. You know, your GovHack type of events where, you know, we're using open data, but the real purpose of that is we're learning how to use technology. We're connecting with other people within our community. We're building products and, you know, all of that is supporting people in having a love and a passion for smart cities, for data, and we're supporting people through that kind of community. So that's what I really enjoy doing. You know, I built one when I was at the city of Casey internally. We had, when I was there, a local government BI meetup. We had, I think it was nearly 40 councils across Victoria and a few in New South Wales, South Australia. And we just come together and collaborate and share and say, hey, I'm using waste data to do this and I built it in Tableau and have a look. And over here, I'm using the census data to help me, you know, look at where I can plan youth services better. So, and the great thing about government is, you know, we're not competitors, it's all open and we're able to learn and share and collaborate. So I think, you know, anything without community is, it's always going to fail because you're just building that culture within people's lives, within an organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we met at LGITSA, the LGITSA conference, which is the local government IT in South Australia. And Nathaniel Mason introduced us. And what I loved about that group is that open sharing community. And it really was a community. And what was interesting is I went to that conference and then that same week or the following week, I went to a smart city conference around that focused on economic development. Yeah. And it was interesting that I was on a panel or I was moderating a panel and someone in the audience asked, you know, this is great, but we need the IT people in the room when we're talking about this smart city thing. Where are they? And I said, oh, well, actually, I met them all last week at this other conference. And so building that community is so important to not only just have, you know, the groups that are still in those silos, but actually bring those people together. And so I think what you're like, when you're talking about BI and talking about what you do, being that central kind of person or not even person, the team, I think data can really do that. I'm wondering whether you think the same thing around, you know, how we integrate across the different disciplines. Is data the key for that, do you think? And I know you're probably biased towards that, but
I'm very biased. But I mean, data is something we all have in common and even more so these days than any day. It doesn't matter if you work in youth services and you deliver events. And so I've worked with those people when I was at the city of Casey. And, you know, they came to me and said, how can we use our data to pinpoint where we can deliver these events that's going to have the most impact for the youth who want to attend? I mean, the common denominator is data. So when I worked in a centralized team of the city of Casey, you know, I was across everybody and everyone's data. And it was just so fascinating to learn all the services that they're providing, all that data is coming in. Yeah, so it's, you know, you get to speak to people and you need people at all different types of levels doing all different types of roles. But at the end of the day, if you in every job is collecting data, it doesn't matter what you do. If you're doing marketing, you're collecting data. Everyone's collecting data. So I think it is definitely a common talking point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And I guess for council, how unique is it to have a data, and maybe you can't answer this, but how unique is it that councils, you know, particularly smaller councils, have their own data analytics team these days?
So I started the city of Casey maybe 3.5 years ago, and it was a complete brand new role. It didn't exist. So I was senior data analyst, and I came there and they were just like, go find the data. We know there's value. Just do whatever you want and provide value and insights, which was great. But, you know, I'd come from a background where, so when I was working in state government, there'd be 2 or 3 or 4 data analysts working on one database. You know, we'd be able to work with each other and we'd understand one database, one data source. When it was at the Department of Justice, it was speed cameras and logs. So just that's it, just one thing. That's all we did was speed cameras. Then I moved into local government and it was just me and, you know, 50, 60 services and all these data points all over the place. So I thought surely other councils are doing this. So that's when I kind of got onto LinkedIn and just reached out to every other data person I could find in government. Feel free, if you don't have me on LinkedIn, connect, I'll accept you all. Because so I've tried to find everyone. I'm like, surely someone is doing this, because I've been working with data for so long. But I think City of Ballarat, they had someone. Obviously, the capital cities are a lot different to, you know, regionals and other councils. But no, there wasn't much at all. So, and that's when I started to build this kind of meetup and try to find out, you know, we're all delivering the same services. Surely we can collaborate and help each other. And look, local government community, so many great people working out there who you can reach out to and who've developed things before that you can learn from. So yeah, no, there wasn't much. But now you do see more and more jobs for data people, data analysts in the more centralized role. So sometimes you'll have a data person in the assets team, a data person in your, maybe in your finance team. But what we did was, I mean, it's quite unique having a centralized, and in the industry, we call this like a center of excellence, where, you know, it's a team that just looks after data, business intelligence, data analytics. And, you know, we're not doing your day-to-day reporting. We're looking for insights and delivering value and helping the whole organization do that. So there's definitely more and more of it, but it does bring me to an interesting point in, you know, regional councils and, you know, the budget to hire teams. It's really, they can't do that. So something that I would love to see is what we call like a standardized data model. So for example, every council does Capital Works. Then every Capital Works team builds themselves a dashboard for internal reporting to show, you know, how much they're spending this year, and they might do a nice map. But, you know, how many councils in Australia are there? You know, probably 500 upwards, all having someone to do that. What I would love to see in local government is a model, a standardized data model. So if we think of it as an Excel spreadsheet, here's five columns, you know, a latitude, a longitude, cost of the property or the project, when it's going to be delivered. If we could have this standardized model and everyone just has that approach, then we could have a standardized report that could then be shared with every single council. One, the benefit it provides to the community, because it all just looks the same. It has the same type of measures. But then the benefits it provides to all these smaller councils who can't afford to hire, you know, experts to build this type of stuff. You know, you can just have it off the shelf and everyone's all the same. Something, you know, I tried to get up and running. It's always difficult because everyone has different systems and different data standards. But yeah, look, if anyone is interested in that type of model, I'd love to talk to you and think about how we could, for all local governments, you know, and there's so many services for the census, for assets, for trees, for, and I know there's pockets of people doing it, but I think that would be a game changer in local government.
Let's do it. Just do it. Yeah, I'm on board. Let's do it. It's been really fun doing this. We were just talking earlier about this Masters of Data Science that I'm doing. And it is really fun because I always think about local government and how we can, yeah, actually do something. And like you said, particularly in regional areas, something that can be scalable, which means it can be affordable for local government, because there's no point having, you know, being like, oh yes, here's a really great solution. You have to hire five people in Roma or whatever, for example, or, you know, smaller places, Tambo, because it's just not viable. They're trying to, you know, get enough people to patch potholes. So yeah, I think what COVID has shown us as well is that we can do this shit virtually, and particularly with data, like there's no reason why we can't. And I think that, yeah, that has to be the way of the future. And I think also, it in the smart city, smart community space, I often say it's no longer good enough that we're wasting resources just because we can't change the way we're doing things. And I think that with data, you know, there is so much opportunity, and whether we call it, maybe we don't call it wasting resources, but rather there's so much opportunity for better utilization of resources, better utilization of the data that we have. So yeah, I'm really excited about local governments really taking hold and using data to benefit the community, and also benefit, like we talk a lot about benefiting the community, and I think everything has to come back to that, but we can actually start internally, right? We can start with day-to-day operations. Can we make this more effective, more efficient? And I think we also get caught up in it has to be big and bold, and which I think it should be the ambition, but a lot of this stuff is pretty simple, right? Like, I shouldn't say simple. Data analytics, you know, there's lots in it, but some of the decisions are quite simple to make once you know where you're going. Would you agree with that?
I think, yeah. So I suppose it's defining that though. So in from a data visualization side of things, it's, you know, there's a lot of work as a data analyst understanding the business, understanding their pain points and what are actually their issues. And then finding those issues in the data sometimes is the problem. They might want to say, you know, this is our problem. Can you build a report to help me answer that? Well, I say, well, you don't have any data on it. You've never collected data on it. So you don't have the data to answer those questions. So the first thing you need to do is, you know, do a survey, do something, get your data in so that I can actually answer those questions. But I suppose it's a lot of work with the business and, you know, they're the experts, they understand what they're doing. But, you know, I'd see it a lot of times when they'd send out a survey, you know, which would bias people in a certain way, or like you mentioned before, we were talking about, you know, using Likert scales and the proper way to do a survey. They'll just go and throw something out there and then they'll come back to me and I'll be like, well, you actually haven't asked the questions that are going to answer those problems that you want to solve. So what I found is, you know, I really have to be involved with this at the start, not just come in at the end and try to fix everyone's problems just because they have a data of they've done some type of survey. Leads me into another thing that I was talking about in terms of the business, which is referred to as self-service analytics. So, you know, at uni, you know, you're learning Tableau. And many councils are using Power BI because Power BI is, you know, a bit more embedded with Microsoft and it kind of works within local government. But we don't expect everyone to be an expert in Power BI or an expert in data visualizations. But what they are an expert is in their own data and the context and what they are doing. So tools like Power BI and Tableau have made this a lot easier for business users to create their own visualizations. Mm. And the power of that is because they understand the context of their data. They don't have to send it off to IT, get IT to create some type of visualization for them. They have access to it. So I suppose a big push that you'll see is this kind of self-service analytics. So this is the business having access to their own data, being able to pull it into a tool like Power BI, and then deep dive into their own data, interrogate their own data, slice it and dice it however they want. I mean, you know, this is building a data culture where I appreciate my data now because I actually understand it. I appreciate that it is an asset. And when I'm not doing the data entry correctly, it's affecting the decisions I make further down the path. So self-service is definitely something, you know, that I love to see that we were running at the City of Casey.
And I'm thinking, like, particularly that self-service aspect, I think is an interesting one, because I also think maybe having played with Tableau and using it quite a lot now, it's interesting, like, you need to have your data in the right format, right? And I think that there's a lot in having that okay, I can play with that, but then having that expertise of the data analysts and the data scientists actually being able to explain how stuff works, so then we can get this like pretty output, this really good data, you know, this really good visualization. So I think, yeah, it goes back to what you're saying about the data culture. It's not that everyone has to be an analyst, you know, or that you need that everyone has to be even making the visualizations, but actually continuing to bring that into them when we see the output. Well, yeah, we can understand, oh, if I don't input that data correctly, then I can't get that, or I can't answer that question, or wouldn't it be great if I could answer this question? Oh, well, that means I'll have to collect this data in this way or whatever. But then actually working with an analyst, and whether it's physically or virtually or on, you know, but case by case basis, I think that's really where the future will be, or I guess is now. And moving into that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, so those roles within your center of excellence, so not everyone's going to be that type of expert. Mm-hmm. They're not going to have the space to keep up with the technology. So their job is to have, you know, this type of data culture where they're running events, So that's what I used to run. You know, this is what's new in Power BI this week. Getting people to come along and share projects they're working on. And, you know, these are the skills. Well, you can't even say it's the skills of the future. These are the skills now that everyone needs to have, you know, understanding data and how it works. Most people can do things with Excel. Excel is always going to be around. It's a powerful tool, but, you know, Power BI, Tableau, these are the type of things which are the skill sets that people want to see on the resume. Like knowing the value of data and that I can interpret data is huge. And yeah, shameless plug for my training course on Power BI for local government. But, you know, that's what I saw as a need within local government. I saw that there was generic courses teaching people how to use Power BI, but not in a local government sense of, you know, using open data, using having data in the wrong format, pulling. So in our training course, we pull data out of the census. And in the first one, we'll try to look at by postcode, where are the most Afghanis in Victoria, so that I can make a decision for a, you know, a client who wants to open an Afghan bakery. So, you know, you don't need to be a data expert in that, but you have to understand the context of the data, where is the data, and then tools like Power BI and Tableau are just making it so easy to manipulate that data and then helping you to make decisions. So definitely, yeah, I wouldn't even say it's a skill of the future. It's the skill of now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm doing an assignment at the moment. Sorry, I keep talking about me. We'll have to cut some of this out. You just said ABS data and, oh, it's been doing my head in. I've been doing a project on, I'm trying to look at data trends in people that don't have access to the internet and what types of groups are being further disadvantaged by not having that access and what, you know, are the trends changing over time, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, it's been a fun journey with ABS data and bringing things in together and linking them and building the database and building the relationships and all that stuff. So I definitely appreciate now how hard you need to work on that side of the fence to actually get it to answer a question or even get it to a point where you know whether you can or can't answer the question.
Yeah, I think it's such an important skill. You know, and I was surprised at how many people don't use the census in local government. Like, the census, in essence, is gold to local government because we have nothing else that describes the demographics of the people who live in our community. Who are the people we serve? Who are they? What languages do they speak? What, you know, I did a project on what library types of language library books should we have in our local libraries? That's that we can get all that out of the census. And there's a product called Table Builder where you can just build it yourself in the census, you know, pull it how you want and then bring it into Power BI and visualize that. But it's, yeah, there's so many, they talk, you know, data-driven decision-making, it's a bit of a buzzword, but if we're not making decisions off that data, and it doesn't have to be, you know, the council's data, there's so much open data out there that we can leverage as well, bringing it in and helping us provide better services.
Yeah, cool. It's been great to chat with you around this. And I know I wanted to talk more around some of the projects and things you've been doing, but we've kind of covered a lot of that. Okay, well, let's move to the future now. What are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
So I don't know if people aren't talking about it, but I suppose it's COVID and where are we going as a workplace after COVID? So I think in council, and maybe because, so I worked in a growth corridor, which was the city of Casey, which had major issues with, not issues, but growth. You know, growth is a good problem to have, but it's a huge growth corridor, second fastest growing local government area in Victoria. It's the largest local government area in Victoria. And one of our main issues is transport. So I live in the city of Casey as well. Obviously not now during COVID, transport is great, but what's going to happen post-COVID? Are people going to go back onto public transport? How's public transport going to work? Are we just going to see more congestion of cars on the road as people are too scared to take public transport and they're going to start traveling? And in my area, in the city of Casey, that's going to cause big problems. If everyone's jumping back in their cars, you know, less car sharing, and everyone's trying to stay away from people, which is going to force congestion into traffic. So that's something interesting, and I don't know if that'll push, you know, all this autonomous automated vehicles, drone deliveries. It's just that I suppose it's, you know, COVID's terrible, but it's a really interesting time to see how technology are going to solve some of these issues. cleaning robots is something that I expect to see very soon, that, you know, some type of cleaning robot that's going to go around and clean our parks and bins and all these type of things.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's going to be a lot of micro and macro changes, particularly with technology and, I guess, fast-tracking certain things, slowing other things down. And, yeah, in mobility, it will be really interesting. And, yeah, the cleaning, I was having a chat with somebody else about that. It will be, I keep saying interesting, but, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see what comes out of that. I've been doing a project and one of the examples were, and it was pre-COVID, the example, it was called like a rubbish bot or robo bot or something like that, where it, yeah, cleaned the streets. I think it was in Italy, and it kind of like went down, instead of it being a garbage truck, you know, then you just, it would cruise down the road and you'd put your rubbish, you know, your bag in it or whatever, rather than having a bin lined up on the street, because, you know, there wasn't enough space and, you know, this autonomous thing would go. So, yeah, really, I mean, yeah, there's going to be so many different things. And also, I think, yeah, how data will play a role in that as well. I mean, obviously, it's already, like you said, they're not skills of the future. It's the skills of now and the data of now. And the things that we'll measure and monitor, I think, will be different, because I think we'll appreciate what we know and what we don't know a bit more, and really think about what we do want to know.
Yeah, and I think it's, I suppose the data is going to play a big role, but I suppose what I haven't seen yet is all these data from different systems. So every system is doing its own thing, but bringing all this data together for as a whole community or a city to make decisions. I suppose like the example I gave with that smart parking, like it was doing one job. But if we're able to leverage all these technologies that are collating data and bringing them into a central source that's going to make decisions, I think that's a huge thing that we haven't really seen yet.
Mm, yeah, no, I agree. So two more questions, pretty easy ones. What are some of your favorite smart community resources or data resources? Like, what do you like to read? Who do you like to follow? What do you like to listen to?
So I love open data. And I suppose that's what kind of, when I first moved into local government, it was, you know, searching for interesting open data that I could then pull into Power BI and find insights in. So I spent a lot of time on, you know, data.vic.gov.au, which is our Victorian open data. Obviously, a lot of time in the census, which I think is the most valuable data set there is for local government. So really, in a data sense, it's open data. And, you know, I'd love to see that kind of, you know, GovHacks or these type of, you know, organizations opening up more and more data for people in the community, but, you know, even local governments who can get access to data and bring it in and combine it with their own data sets to help improve their decision making.
Mm. Yes, I've been spending a lot of time with open data as well lately. We should chat about that later. We should nerd out about that. Me more so just asking you questions. But yeah, no, and Victoria, I think, has quite, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Victoria's open data is not too bad, right?
Yeah, look, it's quite good. There's a lot there. But even, you know, for myself, the data quality sometimes is not always there. So, mm-hmm. I mean, anyone can open a data set. But is that of quality and of value to people is a completely different question. There's so many open data sets that I've used and it's just like, you know, it's rubbish. Mm. So I suppose there's a difference between, you know, me as a council saying, hey, we want to open 50 open data sets this year and this is our goal. But if it's not clean, if it's not quality, yeah, don't bother.
Mm. Yeah, and I was having a chat with someone, I can't remember where it was now, and yeah, it was around that, basically, that it's one thing to open up data, but what people are actually looking for, your everyday person, is looking to visualize it, right, easily. And so actually having that next step of, well, oh, actually now I can look at, I don't know, there's a really nice data set in, I think, City of Melbourne around green roofs. So they've mapped out the green roofs potential of, you know, whatever. And, you know, that data in a spreadsheet, it wouldn't be very useful to anyone, but when you can actually map it out and actually go, oh, that's my roof, and yes, it's got this potential of don't know, greening, then I can do that. And similarly with a lot of the other data sets, pedestrian data sets and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Crash Stats is a Victorian one with all the crashes in Victoria. And, you know, we actually used, that's another interesting project that we used to work out crashes that were near pedestrian crossings for children. We thought there was none, but once we got hold of the open data, we found 9 accidents that were in, you know, 5 meters of within the school time, school crossing time. So, you know, how would we ever get hold of that data? But because it's open and, you know, they're providing that quality data, local governments can then grab that. And, you know, that's a great example of then, okay, I do actually know some areas where there's been accidents and how can I improve that for safety?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm thinking about like New York City's open data portal and looking at some of the projects they're doing. And I think one is, yeah, on Map My Crash or something like that. So then they can look at, advocates can essentially look at street corners and advocate for the next intersection upgrade or whatever it is. But, you know, councils can be doing similar things, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Okay. Well, it's been so great to chat with you. And I feel like we could talk for a long, long, long time. And maybe we definitely should have another chat sometime soon. But yeah, it's been really great to talk to you, Warren Dean. And I really just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Yeah. So feel free. I've started up a YouTube channel because I got tired of blogging. I got tired of writing. And then I didn't realize making difficult videos is actually quite difficult and takes a lot of time as well.
That's why I have a podcast.
Feel free to. So my YouTube channel, pretty much it's me playing around with data and showing you how to do it as well. So at the moment, I'm connecting to social media data. So I show you how to connect to your LinkedIn data, or not connect, download your LinkedIn data, download your Facebook data, Twitter. So tomorrow I'm going to release Google Analytics. So if you want to connect to Google Analytics and Power BI, so feel free to connect on YouTube. Otherwise, datatail.com.au is my website. I have a lot of blogs, which are now actually just links to YouTube, but feel free to jump on there. And there's a whole heap of free kind of local government related Power BI files that you can download. So there's one with crime stats. If you're interested in crime stats in Victoria, you can jump on the blog and you can download that and have a play around with it. And yeah, if you're interested in Power BI training for local government, feel free to reach out for Power BI training as well.
We will put all the links in the show notes so people can click away and find you. And I am going to go over to YouTube and watch some of your videos. I think that will be really good. And yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes as well so people can do that.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. It has taken us a while, mainly my fault, but I'm glad we persevered and we were able to have this convo. And yeah, I reckon we'll definitely have a lot more convos. There's a lot of synergies. We love local government and we love data. So that's exciting.
Yeah, two awesome things. So bringing people together.
Exactly. And community.
We love
community. Thanks so much again, Warren Dean, and we will talk soon.
Thanks, Zoe.
Bye.
Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. Smart.
Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.